Welcome back. You're listening to The Voice of Russia in London. My name's Brendan Cole. At 2,000 pages long, if you dropped it on your foot, it would certainly hurt. The Leveson inquiry into press ethics could also cause some political pain as politicians, the media and the public debate what it means for the future of the industry. Sparked by public revulsion at News of the World's hacking of the phone of the missing teenager Millie Dowler, Lord Justice Leveson heard evidence from an array of newspaper editors, proprietors, celebrities and ordinary people who had been wronged by press intrusion. His key finding was that there must be an independent regulatory body, backed up by statute, to get the press's house in order. He took aim at the Press Complaints Commission, which presides over publications. But as it is comprised of representatives of the major publishers, it's been accused by many of being too in-house and effectively letting the press mark its own homework.
Almost everyone accepts that the Press Complaints Commission has failed in the task, if indeed it ever saw itself as having such a task, of keeping the press to its responsibilities to the public generally. There must be change. The press needs to establish a new regulatory body which is truly independent of industry leaders and of government and of politicians.
But the Prime Minister, David Cameron, who set up the inquiry in the first place, said that a statute of this kind is crossing the Rubicon towards a state-controlled press. David Cameron did tell newspaper editors this week they must implement the Leveson Report recommendations in their entirety if the government is to hold off introducing a new press law.
I've told them that they have to produce a tough, independent regulatory system rapidly, and they've got to do it in a way that it is absolutely meets the requirement of Lord Justice Leveson's report. That means £1 million fines, proper investigation of complaints, prominent apologies, a tough independent regulatory system. And they know, because I told them, the clock is ticking for this to be sorted out.
So what happens now? What questions need answering? And who are the winners and losers of the report? What will it mean for the future of press freedom and press intrusion in the UK? Well, joining me to discuss this is Des Friedman. He's founder member of Media Reform, a group which coordinates the work of advocacy groups campaigning to protect the public interest in the light of the Leveson inquiry. He's also a lecturer at Goldsmiths University in London. Also here in the studio is Liz Howell, director of broadcasting at City University London and former managing editor of Sky News. On the phone, we have Rob Lyons, who's the deputy editor of Spiked Online, and James Allen Anslow, who's a media academic who researches tabloid journalism at the University of Essex, and he was for many years a senior journalist on the News of the World and The Sun. Thank you very much for joining me here on The Voice of Russia. Des Friedman, we got a lot of salacious detail. We heard about text messages between Rebecca Brooks and the Prime Minister, but what did the Leveson report really tell us about Fleet Street?
Well, it told us that something needs to change, something big, and it has to be done soon. And that's exactly the message which, it seems to me, is being fudged by the talks that are going on at the moment amongst the editors, who say they are committed to introducing this sort of change and committed to putting the principles that Leveson has recommended into practice, but ignoring the one central recommendation, which is there has to be, in order for there to be change, some kind of statutory underpinning of this. So you have this 2,000 pages which talks about some of the horrors that were done to ordinary people, wrecking their lives in some cases, and that the one recipe, the core of the recipe, has to be we have to have some kind of new independent self-regulatory system in law. That one lesson does not seem to have been learnt by the editors as they meet.
Liz Howell, did anyone come out of this report very badly? Because it seemed that very few people were strongly criticised.
I think everybody came out of it fairly badly. There's lots of interesting things in the report if you dig in, which don't reflect very well on anyone. In fact, I think perhaps one of the cleverest things that Brian Leveson has done is to get on a plane and fly away to Australia at this point and leave everyone else to argue about what he really meant. There's a great deal of confusion about this so-called statutory underpinning. Personally, I hate the phrase underpinning because it sounds like something I would go to Marks and Spencer's for. I don't really know what it means. I don't know where the statute comes in. I don't know what the difference is between, say, a statute and a law. I don't know whether this body is going to be implemented in law or whether the body that implements the body is going to be controlled by law. In fact, I've got to the stage now of thinking, you know, who guards the guardians? Who guards the guardians? Who guards the guardians? So I do think we need some clarity, and I suspect that David Cameron is exploiting all this confusion at the moment to try and make sure that he gets everyone on side.
Rob Lyons, I'll turn to you. Do you see it that way? Do you see David Cameron exploiting this confusion? I guess the report wasn't really that critical of him. It was a little bit critical of Murdoch. It wasn't too critical of the police, which people were expecting it to be. It seems that the Leveson report didn't really want to pick a fight with anyone. I mean, what do you make of that?
The very existence of the inquiry and the very terms in which it was it proceeded was actually kind of essentially a foregone conclusion in terms of what the report was going to produce, and the fact that it may or may not be specifically critical of individuals or organisations is neither here nor there. This was a show trial for the tabloid press. It was the elite of the country saying, we disapprove of you, and now we want to rein you in, and we want to bring you under control. And whether it's guardians of guardians of guardians, as Liz was saying, you know, ultimately what Leveson is demanding is that the law should be allowed in some way, perhaps at arm's length, to regulate what gets printed in Britain's newspapers. And I think that that is a really serious problem. And the people who lose out from that are the readers of those newspapers.
James Allen Anslow, I mean, what did you make of his finding about this idea of an independent regulatory body? That's fair enough, isn't it? Because the Press Complaints Commission, which has been monitoring things up until now, is just they're marking their own homework, and there does need to be some kind of change.
To be honest, I think it completely misses the elephant in the room. It's completely ignored the whole business about what is the press, where do we get our news, and where do we read it. You know, in 2,000 pages, there was one page that covered the internet. And I think this is ignoring the single most important thing that's going to be affecting the press, whatever that is now. You know, it talks about it wants to get significant news publishers on board for this thing. But who are significant news publishers? A newspaper like The Independent that sells 80,000 copies a day? Or shouldn't it be including Huffington Post and other serious websites with many, many more readers?
You're listening to The Voice of Russia. We're discussing the freedom of the press in the wake of the Leveson inquiry with Des Friedman from Goldsmith University, London, and founder member of Media Reform, Liz Howell, Director of Broadcasting at City University, London, and former Managing Editor of Sky News. On the phone, Rob Lyons, who's Deputy Editor of Spiked, and James Allen Anslow, a media academic researching tabloid journalism at the University of Essex. Des Friedman, do you find it odd? I mean, that of the 1 million words that was in this thumping report, only 1,000 or so, I think one page, dealt with online, dealt with Twitter, dealt with social media. There seems to be a degree of naivety in how the media is developing, and this certainly won't mean that the report will be future-proof.
I think there's a willful misreading of the situation. I mean, he's not naive about this. What he is saying is, A, there are still such institutions as dominant news sources. Most people still get their information from television news. We know that the press, the old print press, still have a very important role in setting the agenda. So they are not marginal. The fact is, what he's talking about is the responsibility of large organisations. And what his recommendations are just as appropriate to online as offline. It's not about going after individual bloggers. It's about saying that the largest news organisations, whether they are online or offline, have a responsibility. And I think that just to say that it's the elephant in the room is simply the absence of the internet is actually, for a start, it's forgetting the other, even bigger elephant in the room, which is about the problem of concentrated ownership. That, for me, is a much more significant issue, which he raises but really fails to make any robust conclusions about.
But he doesn't actually, in his report, make any strong criticism of blogs, and Twitter weren't actually named, and in fact he dismissed them.
No, but the point is that what kind of institutions amplify those individual voices? And he is saying that effectively, whether we like it or not, what happens is on what we used to call Fleet Street is still incredibly significant. And so if we set ethical guidelines, if we try and put into practice a framework which will reward good journalism, then actually, why not have, and there are lots of incentives for this, he is saying that it may be that the larger online organisations may want to come into this tent.
Liz, how do you see it that way? Do you see that the press is still, I mean, with dwindling sales of hard copies of newspapers, and perhaps, you know, the potentially in the future, newspapers like The Guardian maybe just completely being online offerings, do you see a report like this being able to deal with the future of the industry?
Lord Justice Leveson's remit was not to deal with the whole of the press and the communications industry and where we get our news from. His remit was to deal with the the unfair and really quite wrong things that were perpetrated by members of the press. You do not get bloggers hanging around outside people's houses or pushing money through the letterbox or making terrible allegations that you know, members of the public feel ruin their lives. At this stage, you do not get that from bloggers and so on. This was about bad behaviour by bad and really unpleasant behaviour by members of the press, and that's what he was dealing with, and that's what he dealt with. To say that because he hasn't dealt with the internet, he's somehow making it difficult for newspaper owners is absolutely irrelevant. Newspapers are a commercial activity. They stand and fall by how many copies they sell. If they're going downhill, that is not the concern of Lord Leveson. If they're financially going downhill, that is not the concern of Lord Leveson. His remit was to look at bad behaviour in the press and the outrage that very many people felt about it, and that's what he did. And I think it's perfectly right that there was minimal about the internet in this report, because it was not about the internet, and that's not what he was set up to do. And it was most definitely not his job to try and put into place some sort of process which would protect the commercial interests, which are the large newspapers.
Well, over the finer detail of his understanding of the press, I'll turn to James Allen Anslow. You worked as a senior journalist for The Sun and News of the World for many years. What did you make of Lord Justice Leveson's understanding of the press and how it operated? I mean, he called for no more off-the-record briefings between police and journalists. I mean, what did you make of some of the finer detail of his recommendations?
I had to conclude that there was a huge, on his part, a very naive failure to grasp how journalism works. Journalism in general, let alone tabloid journalism. That everybody who works within journalism or journalism educators know that journalists are not public relations communicators. The way journalists get there news is very often at the margins. It is very often by off-the-record conversations. I'm no fan of the lobby, for example, the way that British journalists are given stuff unattributably by the government. But it does play a part, and I think we ought to. It's worth bearing in mind that all the dreadful things that happened, and they were dreadful, were really much more a failure of law enforcement. They were not a failure of regulation. They were a failure of miserably poor law enforcement, whether it was the criminal law where bribery was ignored, or whether it was the criminal law where voicemail interception was ignored, or whether it was the criminal law where quite clear matters of contempt were published by national newspapers, which the government were very late in prosecuting. So the main thing that went on here was a failure of law enforcement and not of regulation.
Rob Lyons from Spiked, what do you think of that? Was it a failure of law enforcement? It seems like law enforcement's relatively effective in that the 90 people have been charged under existing legislation over illegal behaviour, illegal hacking.
Yeah, well, there seems to have been an absolute sort of like witch hunt against those tabloid journalists now. I mean, going back to a point that Liz made about, I mean, I thought was important, was that actually the newspapers live or die by their reputation and by the copies that they can sell. So if they get a reputation that becomes unacceptable, then they lose out as that. So in relation to Hillsborough, The Sun has been mud ever since in terms of Merseyside, and its reputation is terrible there. In relation to the Millie Dowler allegations, that closed the News of the World because Murdoch couldn't sell the advertising anymore. So in these really serious cases, the consequences are in terms of people's trust and acceptance of those media outlets. We don't need regulation to do these things. We need, obviously, as a professional journalist myself, I like to think that I uphold certain standards, and I think that I hope that all other journalists will uphold certain standards. But at the end of the day, in terms of trustworthiness and how people feel about newspapers, they can very easily and very quickly lose their reputation with very serious damaging consequences in terms of their financial well-being if they consistently get things wrong. I don't think we need the heavy hand of the law involved in this.
Liz Howell, your response?
I think that's really interesting, but the problem with those particular examples you've given are that's when the public reaction has happened after the crime, for want of a better word, has occurred. The Sun said terrible things about Liverpool fans at Hillsborough, and it was the reaction that caused problems for The Sun. It didn't stop them doing it in the first place. Exactly the same with the Millie Dowler business. They did it, and then people were appalled. What I think needs to happen is for them not to do it in the first place, and that's why there needs to be this new body. I do agree that the regulation issue behind that, the statutory, non-statutory law, non-law, statute or law issue is very complex and difficult. But I feel very strongly that you must accept that a new body has to be there.
I'll turn to you, Des. What about this idea of a backstop provided by Ofcom? The press is universally against that, isn't it?
Before I answer that, I just wanted to come back to the idea that it's just about the law. I mean, if that's the case, what do you say to an ordinary citizen like Christopher Jeffries, who was accused and won damages against 8 newspapers? He was accused of the murder of Joanna Yates. Nothing was against the law there, but it almost wrecked his life. He's not a celebrity. He was just one of the many people, because of a lack of ethics, a desire to pursue headlines, not breaking the law, but actually making his life hell.
But the fact that he won damages showed that the existing law was effective.
Well, no, the legal process that allowed him to go to court is going to be scrapped next year, which makes it vastly more difficult for non-millionaires to pursue that kind of justice. And actually, that was partly on the back of huge amount of support to make sure that this case was picked up. It is not an avenue that is open to everybody. So I think that's one question. It is not just about the law. And even if it is about the law, let's not forget that the press, as we heard during the Leveson inquiry, had all sorts of complex relationships between the Metropolitan Police and the press. So, you know, you can't just completely insulate these two institutions from each other in the first place. If you want to answer about Ofcom, I mean, this is a very difficult and highly politically charged area. But the fact is, it's the one area where Leveson, basically, you can see him shrugging, holding his hands up and saying, look, I have suggested this system. It's a system which must be underpinned in law if we are not just to have more drinks in the Last Chance Saloon. However, if some of the newspapers do not rise to the challenge and do not want the inducements that I've given them, we may have to consider something else. That may be Ofcom, but I am not willing, he says, to put that in my recommendations. So, I mean, to focus on that seems to me to be missing the point, which is about how do you make sure that you get a self-regulatory institution which is going to be effective and work and make sure that everybody signs up to it. We should then discuss about backstop regulation and who might be the best people or the best institution to make that happen.
Rob Lyons from Spiked. Basically, when David Cameron greeted the news of this report, he said he virtually rejected it. So newspaper editors had nothing to fear, it seemed, initially. Yet what he said yesterday was that he's given them until Thursday to come up with some kind of understanding. Do you see that that's going to be very likely, that the editor of the Daily Mail is going to agree with the editor of the Express and the editor of the Sun and the editor of the Telegraph to come some kind of agreement?
It's hard to imagine, but I think given the political pressure that's on these editors, then that it's entirely possible. Nothing should be ruled out. But it just shows that David Cameron's principles don't stretch very far, and that he's quite happy for there to be some kind of regulation and restrictions on, effectively, I think, restrictions on the free press, even if there won't be statutorily underpinned. I mean, it seems to me that actually what's happening here could potentially be that a bunch of editors, who they're not accountable to me, could be effectively making up rules that will eventually apply to much more widely than them themselves. And I think that's a real problem. I think that the whole system, the whole idea of having a regulator is really problematic. It's, the illustration of Ofcom is really good one, because you think, well, we're going to have something like an Ofcom-type regulator on this industry, whether it's Ofcom themselves or some new body. And you think, well, Ofcom's got its own agenda. The people who are at the top of Ofcom have got very particular axes to grind. And as a result, they have a very significant say in what happens in the media. And I think that's a really big problem. And I think that any new regulator, whether it is Ofcom or a completely new body, would have the same role. We'd have a selection of the great and the good deciding what should be what we should be allowed to read and what we shouldn't be allowed to read. I think that's a problem. I think it's far better, for all the problems that exist with the current press, to have a free press, a really open press that isn't regulated in these ways, and let us make our own minds up.
You're listening to The Voice of Russia. We're discussing press freedom in the wake of the Leveson report with Des Friedman, Liz Howell, Rob Lyons and James Allen Anslow. Liz Hall, newspapers don't particularly like Ofcom. They don't particularly like the vision, I guess, of Ed Richards, the chief executive of Ofcom, and his sweeping vision of media regulation. But maybe his idea that perhaps, you know, in years to come, when you can access your newspaper online on a television set, and that line comes very blurred between broadcast, online, newspaper, maybe what he is saying is quite relevant, and the newspaper's editors will have to come on board with that.
Yes, I've thought a lot about why Lord Justice Leveson mentioned Ofcom, because it was really quite a crazy thing to do on one level, because once you mention Ofcom, you know all the press are going to go, ah, you know, we're going to be like broadcasting, this couldn't be worse. So why did he mention Ofcom? And the only reason I can think is exactly as you say, that if you're thinking of the future and you're taking into account possible internet, then Ofcom has got a role in that, and you can see it happening. However, in the short term, I think bringing Ofcom in, even mentioning it, has really muddied the waters, and it has given the press something to latch onto and rant on about. And if you actually look at the Leveson report, he is not saying it's got to be Ofcom, or what Ofcom's got to do, or Ofcom's this, or Ofcom's that. It's almost like a side issue, and I think it was put in as a way of, if you like, future-proofing. And the press have got hold of it, and it's got out of control. I really do believe that having people judge whether or not members of the press are behaving correctly is perfectly acceptable. And to say that a statutory underpinning of that would in some way restrict what we read, I don't get that at all. All it would restrict is the way journalists behave in the first place, and it would make sure that they did obey the law.
Isn't the point, though, that it's not necessarily going to restrict it initially, but it's the thin edge of the wedge?
Well,
it's going to eventually...
Explain that to me, Brendan. How is it the thin end of the wedge?
Well, I mean, I guess the point is that it wouldn't necessarily happen under this parliament, but you never know what happens in parliaments to come. And the expression that David Cameron used, crossing the Rubicon, suggests that it could be a prelude to something more restrictive in 10, 15 years' time, and he'll be known as the Prime Minister that introduced it.
If a government in the future wishes to cross the Rubicon, they can cross the Rubicon as they wish, or if they win their fight. I don't, you know, the fact that there may be a very modest statute underpinning an auditor for a self-regulatory body is hardly crossing the Rubicon. If you get someone who genuinely wants to undermine press freedom in the future, well, they're going to do it whatever. And I tell you what, we're all going to need to be dealing with that as and when it happens. That is not what is happening now.
And this crossing the Rubicon phrase is a bit daft anyway, if you look at what it really means. I mean, it means no going back. And you can always go back and you can go forward, and other governments at other times may do other things. This is a very, very... I was going to say trivial, that's the wrong word, it's not trivial at all, but it's a very minor piece of statute if it goes ahead at all.
James Allen Aslow, I'd like to turn to you. I mean, there is a hugely political aspect to this, and obviously Leveson can only make recommendations, but it's up to Parliament to implement them, and they seem to be very much divided. I mean, there seems to be unequivocal support from Ed Miliband, support from Nick Clegg, a good swathe of Tories as well. I mean, do you see this actually going through Parliament and being forced through in that kind of way?
This is all political. All this upshot of Leveson and the way that the various political parties are playing it was all utterly predictable. And the answer to your question is, I really don't know. It will depend, you know, what politics wins out in the end. But on the actual question, I just would want to sort of emphasise, as somebody who worked for tabloid newspapers for 30 years, that there is nowhere in the West, nowhere in the so-called free world, are journalists more regulated and more overseen than they are in the UK. I mean, you know, that is why this country is the libel capital of the world. I mean, what was just said about Jeffries and about how no laws were broken, that's utterly not true. The laws of contempt were clearly broken, and clearly the resulting coverage was libelous, and that was successfully sued. I totally agreed with the person who said that the change of access to libel actions is a terrible movement. If that actually goes through, that would be dreadful. That will make it much harder for people to sue. No win, no fee libel actions are basically a good thing. I mean, I think one of the good things that may come out of all this, I think, is the idea, which is kind of implied, of kite marking. There's going to be more and more people running proper outfits on the internet, proper bloggers. People seem to think bloggers are weird guys in bedrooms. You know, I'm talking about real bloggers like Guido Fawkes and so many others. That some of these people, not Guido, but some of these people might want to come in on such an organisation and be kite marked. And so that PCC2 might become
a self-regulating, kite-marking kind of banner, as it were.
Well, I'll take that too, Rob Lyons. Rob Lyons, what do you think of that?
I think the kite-marking thing's really, really dangerous as well, and James raises a very interesting point about the libel laws, because one of the things that hasn't had a great deal of attention is Leveson's proposal that those who accept regulation and join this body will be continue to have the protection against of be able to get their legal costs back if they're ever sued for libel, and those who do not will lose that privilege. And that gives opens up a real possibility of lots of spurious libel actions against all sorts of media organisations. I mean, an organisation like Spiked, we're pretty small. I mean, so the idea of having to foot the bill for legal costs of any description, even if we've got our journalism right, would be a real worry to us. So that's actually possibly more of a threat than the regulator that's getting all of the discussion.
We're running out of time, but Des Friedman, I'd just like to get your view on the victims of phone hacking. Will they take any solace from this report, do you think?
As it stands, they seem pretty depressed about what's happened. They had very high expectations. They broadly welcomed the report, although as in the last week, they've also read the detail, and I think they've been slightly underwhelmed by it, but nevertheless broadly sympathetic. But they were completely demoralised by Cameron's reaction. And then when they see a bunch of editors getting together, trying to come up with a gentleman's club for the press, which will make no significant difference, I think that they were hoping for a lot more than this.
Liz Howell, there's been 7 reports since 1949. Do you think this one will make any difference?
Yes, I think it will. But I think that the huge problem at the moment is the confusion about what this statutory underpinning actually means. And I think that's the most difficult thing about this report, because that's the one thing that people are latching onto and getting terribly hysterical about. And I think that that has got to be clarified in the next few days. And I think, as I've said before, that David Cameron is playing it very clever, because he started off by saying, oh, no statutory regulation of the press, we need a free press. But what is being suggested by Leveson doesn't, it seems to me, in any way impinge free press. So I really want to know where this is going legally. I think that that is going to be to say that it's exciting might be going a bit far, but the most interesting development in the next week.
James Allen Anslow, have prospects for press reform been enhanced by Leveson's recommendations?
I think they've been enhanced, but my big warning would be beware unintended consequences. And my second point would be, I hear everything that's been said, but frankly, one page out of 2,000 on the internet was absurd and misses the main thing that will affect the press.
Rob Lyons, Leveson mentioned he didn't want to see a 9th report. Do you think there might be one in years to come?
Well, I'm very worried that this report will have an impact, and what we'll end up with is a blander and less free press that will be less able to hold the great and the good to account. I mean, for all the puerile and problematic nature of some of the reporting out there, I think that it's much better to have a free press that's not regulated by the government or by the great and the good. And I think that that's a very real possibility and a very real danger now.
Well, sadly, we've run out of time. We'll just have to leave it there. I'd just like to finish by thanking my guests in the studio, Liz Howell, Director of Broadcasting at City University London and former Managing Editor at Sky News. Also here in the studio, Des Friedman, founder of Media Reform, which coordinates the work of advocacy groups campaigning to protect the public interest in the light of the Leveson inquiry. On the phone, Rob Lyons, Deputy Editor of Spiked, and James Allen Anslow, media academic, researching tabloid journalism at the University of Essex, and a former journalist on The Sun and News of the World. Thank you for joining me, Brendan Cole, on The Voice of Russia in London. We'll